Welcome to The Procurement Show.
Hello, and welcome to The Procurement Show, the show that tackles the topics we all need to think about and sets out to explore the more interesting bits of procurement. I'm Jonathan O'Brien.
And I'm Paul Philpott. My job this weekend is to go tie shopping. Not for myself, for him.
I like a nice selection.
I know.
This week we're talking about talent management and procurement and why now is the time to have a bit of a rethink about procurement talent and in particular planning for the future talent that we need and what we need to do to get there.
The Procurement Show is brought to you by Positive Purchasing, building exceptional procurement and negotiation the world over.
To help us, we have somebody who knows quite a bit about procurement talent. She started her career in India with Credit Suisse. She is an engineer who went on to do her MBA at the Indian Institute of Management in Ahmedabad and then went into consulting, ending with Kearney, bringing the expertise and exposure to procurement across multiple market industries. Please welcome to the Procurement Show, Priya Kumari. Priya, welcome. It's really great to have you join us today.
Thanks a lot, Jonathan. Very lucky to be here and nice to be talking to you and Paul.
Thank Brilliant. You. It's nice to have somebody on the program who has some talent, just like me.
That was going to be my line.
Was it really?
Yeah, it was.
Was it really? I
and
see.
You got me first.
That's why I've got the talent.
So before we get into the questions, I've got to ask you, Priya, do engineers make good procurement people? Because I'm one. I'm just leading.
You are, aren't you? You're electronics engineer.
Yes,
that's not a made-up question. It's actually true.
I think engineers are actually quite natural, problem solvers.
Yeah.
I studied material science engineering. You know, you could imagine me taking a steel bar and thinking, oh, what do you need to do the bar to make it good for construction or to make it good for, you know, going inside your steel watch or something like that. So I think engineers are actually quite natural problem solvers because they try and like break things into, you know, little chunky parts.
Yeah.
And got the knack for it, thinking what's been there. It's like breaking up a gadget and really, really going deep into different parts and then still assembling it to make the gadget do what it's supposed to do.
Yeah, while you've been talking, I've taken the desk apart. I can't get the leg back on. So in general, Priya, let's talk about procurement talent. Does procurement do procurement talent well? What do you think?
Yeah, that's a tough one. I think procurement does it to some extent, but I think there's still a long way to go. Unfortunately, I do feel like most companies treat procurement talent as you would treat internet in the dot-com era in 2000s or something. It's a lot more looking at your suppliers, getting a few RFPs, running the tender process, and all of that is great. And it's important. It needs to happen. But I don't think a lot of companies actually take the time to take the talent very seriously, which basically means how do you think of nurturing the procurement talent to solve business problems together with the business rather than just bringing the analytics and getting the contracts done, which is obviously important, but it's not the only thing.
It seems that procuring talent is a problem that many, many industries have, not just procurement. So what are we doing wrong? Do we need to rethink our approach with regards to how we find talent, how we attract talent? What's the solution?
I think it starts really at the top. I think talent has to be very much a part of your strategy as you think of the company. And I'll elaborate what I mean by that. It's a bit like when we try and buy a Ferrari. You need to know the basics of driving, but you also need to know how to run a Ferrari and how is that different from a Mini or whatever. So I think talent is really core. There has to be very much strategic focus in what the talent needs to achieve. And it has to tie back to the goal of procurement as well. And I think that's changing quite a lot. It's not just costs anymore. It's a lot more than that. It's a lot more holistic value. And then once you realize that talent strategy has to get the focus that it needs, then I think there is an element of actually investing in the talent, which means equipping them with tools, capabilities that are needed for them to do their job faster in procurement so that there is time and bandwidth left to do actually some strategic thinking on how to drive value with business.
And actually, Jonathan, I'm going to go back to your question earlier about engineers and procurement.
Yeah.
It's a point that you often make that in order to find good people for procurement, good talent, you don't necessarily need to look for the traditional backgrounds. You can go a bit off-piste and find real creative talent for your industry.
Yeah, and increasingly, the best procurement people are not from procurement, especially as we get into an age where it's about the data, it's about your ability to use AI. We're going to talk about that in a minute. But actually, I think you need a mix of skills. Of course, you need the traditional procurement stuff, But that's knowledge. You can learn that and you need some experience. But actually, some of the other skills are even more useful these days. I love the example of the Ferrari because I really struggle whenever I buy my Ferraris.
Same here. How many times
do you buy them?
Well, it's weekly, once a week, something like that.
Yeah.
So where are we heading with this stuff? So where's procurement heading? If we think to the future, what's the talent? What are the skills that we need for the future?
First and foremost, what we really need to think as skills is the fact that procurement people are humans. They are humans. You know, they can make relationships and they need the skills to make relationships both with their suppliers and with their counterparts in the business, in other functions, in finance, in R&D, in supply chain, and so on. And why do they need these skills? Because it helps them really understand the language and the problem that different functions are trying to solve, and then become a partner, a true business partner in that sense, rather than just being somebody who comes in at the tail end of a contracting process. So that's the first skill about relationship building and business partnering. And I think the second really is a lot more about understanding how to be agile when the market changes quite a lot. The strategies and the levers that I would have driven, I don't know, 10 years ago or 5 years ago are not so relevant anymore because my suppliers are changing as well. They have also changed a lot in their own manufacturing process, which changes the price that I get from suppliers. The competition has changed quite a lot in the market. So the agility about understanding the market and then reacting to it is very important, rather than going in with a heads-on siloed process of, hey, I'm going to run this tender and, you know, get the price down kind of thing. And I think the third is really about digital. And that's the one actually, which quite funnily, I think is quite abused as well a lot, because companies buy in all sorts of tools. They go in like shopping, they buy 15 different tools to fit in their procurement architecture. And then they end up saying, oh, this is not working. Well, it's not working because you actually bought agents. You did not really connect the two together to humans who can make them work. So I think it's really about understanding how can you embed digital in your ways of working rather than buying point solutions for digital.
Yeah, and it's almost a cliche when we say that digital and technology is moving so quickly. It always has moved quickly. It just probably seems that it's moving more quickly now than it ever has done. Perhaps that's true. So when you're trying to recruit talent and you're working in an environment where technology is moving at such a fast pace, how do you go about making the two things work together? How do you go about finding talent that has the right skills for technology that perhaps doesn't even exist yet?
The key thing about finding that sort of skill in procurement is knowing that things are going to change. And we need people who have the skill sets of naturally understanding and being quite open to change, which means keeping an eye out on the bigger problem that you're trying to solve at the end of the day. But at the same time, having a constant learning and attitude, which tells you, okay, how can you solve the same problem by leveraging different tools, different skill sets, a lot of which come as you go. And I think there's also a lot of legacy knowledge that exists in procurement that is heavily, heavily underutilized when we think of future-looking strategies. Funnily enough, I was talking to somebody yesterday who's probably spent 20 years of his career in consulting and across different industries and is now a CPO in a chemicals company. And I think that he mentioned a lot is really about knowing that the problem that you're solving has also changed, which means the metrics on which procurement performance is measured changes quite a lot. And that needs to reflect in the way we hire talent and the way we think about the future talent as well.
And now it's time for this week's fun fact.
The inventor of Vaseline, Robert Cheeseborough, used to eat a spoonful of the stuff every day.
Ooh.
You don't want to know how many takes it took us to get that right.
Dearie me.
The fun fact. Contact us by email, hello@theprocurementshow.com, or connect with us on LinkedIn. Search for The Procurement Show. The Procurement Show is brought to you by Positive Purchasing, the home of category management that delivers breakthrough results.
So you're looking at talent that has agility and adaptability. And Jonathan, those qualities are often qualities that procurement is critiqued for not having.
Well, I think one of the issues, and I think you touched on it there, is that things haven't changed much in procurement in the last 20 years or so. It's only now that everything seems to be being turned upside down. So that agility just hasn't really happened. People haven't learnt how to do that stuff. So being agile, you know, that isn't necessarily something you can go on a course to learn. It's about the resilience you develop because you have to go and do something differently in figuring that out. And then you learn how to be able to flex. So a lot of those things are life lessons in many ways, but you need to be on that journey doing procurement one way, then having to flex and do it another way. And then you very quickly learn how to be agile. But what you say brings me to another key point here, because what we have seen in the last 12 months is CPOs just holding back in investing in developing their talent. And once upon a time, you kept your talent really absolutely at the top of the game in terms of strategic procurement and being able to do what you need, because that's where the business results came from. And what we've seen is people just holding back, investing, almost not investing in people at all, because, and this is a question for you, Priya, is it because everybody's investing in tech or waiting for that magic AI thing that means we don't have to worry about people anymore? Or is it just a sign of the economic downturn that we're seeing in many industry sectors now?
I think it's quite interesting because I feel like it's a bit of both, depending on the market and the region or the country and the sector that you look at. And a lot of times, I feel like the thing that's the secret that we are missing in procurement is really about how do we justify the investment for talent? And often people quite look at this too differently. They think, okay, this is about a training program. Let's launch a self-paced training program, some external training program, and let's invest in procurement talent. But they don't try and tag that back to the outcome that you're trying to achieve. I guess the ROI on investing in procurement talent becomes significantly better if you flip the equation on its head. And if you think of saying, hey, I used to get, you know, like 10% saving, doing the conventional things day in and out since the last 5 years. If I am going to reinvest in my procurement talent, which costs me a certain amount, then by the end of the year, and maybe for the next 3 years or 5 years, my procurement is going to fundamentally change the way it works with the business. It's not going to do a conventional sourcing process. It's actually going to think of the business requirements. It's actually going to drive negotiations very strategically and achieve more results. And I think that's where the catch really lies, that how do we look at this from an ROI perspective rather than an expense or a training expense perspective? And sadly enough, I mean, today a lot of companies are actually quite struggling with the budgets and everything. We're just taking a hit on how much they invest on procurement talent. But I feel like we need to change this if we need to think of the longer term.
Definitely. Yeah. And one of the statistics that we've developed, when people have gone through our red sheet negotiation training, for example, they will cite a 25% better outcome than if they hadn't done it. And we've got a number of companies that have actually measured that. So you get an ROI because you can say, if you're better at negotiating, these are the outcomes you get. It gets less tangible for things like category management and supply relationship management because the benefits are longer term. But the ROI is there, but you have to tell a bit of the story as to what this will do and then the value that will flow from that in time.
I'm going to go there, but I wasn't the first person to go there with the old AI thing, because Jonathan mentioned it before I did. It did slip out. With reference to what you said earlier, Jonathan, about quote unquote, that magic AI thing, I think with these exact words.
The magic AI thing.
It's here to stay. Do we have the talent today? This is a question to both of you, actually, because you're developing a whole platform with it.
Yeah.
Do we have the talent today to harness? And if not, what are the skills that procurement need in order to move forward with this new tool? But furthermore, what are the risks of running with this new tool with the talent that perhaps don't understand how to utilize it?
Good question.
I like how you described it. It's actually a very much of a shiny new tool, right? And I think I'm a huge believer in technology. Don't get me wrong. I guess my only point is it's a bit like buying all sorts of technical gadgets in your room when you don't know how to really use them. I think the AI thing is going to stay for sure. And it's very productive. I can say my efficiency has become like 10 to 15% better just using AI in my job. But I also think it's a bit like a super intelligent intern. And today we probably don't have the talent to leverage the best of its capabilities in most cases. And that's even why it's important to invest in the talent so that the talent is able to use this AI shiny tool or intern, as you'd like to call it, to drive what procurement needs to do better. And I feel like if a lot more of the process stuff and the underlying data-driven intelligence gets aided by AI, then if I were a category manager, I would have a lot more time to take a step back, think of the big picture, and really focus my time and energy on driving larger value than what I could without AI.
So yeah. Passing that to Jonathan then, Priya says we perhaps don't have the talent to leverage its capabilities at the moment. That makes me think there is a risk element. Where do we sit with that?
Well, there is a risk element. I think one of the biggest risks is not knowing the dangers of AI. And clearly, if you're going to use an open AI tool and start loading your commercially sensitive information into it because you want to find an answer, you are giving away competitive advantage. Your competitors are going to benefit from the same queries and prompts they might put into the AI agent. But I think there's two levels here. And Priya, you touched on it in the second part of what you said there. I think the first bit is actually, do we have the skills to use AI? Well, if we look at AI today as a kind of agent, even if we have a walled garden chat bot type AI, that's there. And procurement people are using that stuff. And it's like saying, here's a bicycle, get on it. It'll be a bit wobbly at first, but then you're off. You know, it's the sort of tool that once you play with it, it can do anything as long as the organization has set it up in a way so you're not going to be putting data at risk. But I think the bigger story is not what we see today, because this is just child's play stuff. The bigger story is when agentic AI is powering the agents, the different integrated platforms that then has access to the big data. You then say, actually, everything we do in terms of category management can then be done much easier. Sustainability happens much easier because we can see entire supply chains. Supply relationship management becomes easier because we're able to look at the strategic relationship and use AI tools as one of the team to help us work in that relationship. And again, with negotiation, AI becomes one of the team working with you. And that's a whole new skill set that we need procurement to learn how to use. But also we need the systems where AI is much more embedded. And that's not there today. Today it's quite superficial. So we need systems, but we will need talent as well. Would you agree, Priya?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's a great summary. Yeah.
Good. We'll be right back with Priya Kumari in just a moment.
Report, Captain Bywell.
Sir, we've recovered one.
What? A Procleus?
Yes, sir.
Good work, Bywell. Where did you find it?
That was easy, sir. We looked at the companies with good strategic procurement. They all use Procleus. Look, I've got it here.
Quick, ma'am, open it up. Aha, it's got toolkits, category management, SRM, sustainable procurement, and look, red sheet negotiation.
Here, sir, an academy with a skills assessment and a virtual learning environment.
Great Scott! This thing has Capella too. It can create category strategies for you.
And Ruby, sir, the AI negotiation co-pilot.
Hello.
Bywell, you'll get a medal for this.
Procleus, the AI-powered platform for strategic procurement. Search Procleus or visit positivepurchasing.com to find out more.
The Procurement Show.
So do you think we're moving to a place where the talent that we need in procurement is less procurement, but more generic skills, for example, as we just said, using AI, but other things as well in terms of how you engage, how you build relationships? And if so, can we cross-fertilize how procurement talent gets developed alongside the rest of the business?
Yeah, there's definitely an element of some of the softer skills that's very important as we think of it, like the whole influencing and storytelling about making the right decisions for the business together with them. And then, of course, being mindful of the negotiations and the dynamics at play when you engage with your suppliers is super important. So I do think there's a lot more focus on that. And the good part about that skill set is that it's really transferable and quite fungible in nature. And as a result of it, it changes the way we do category management. It's not so much of a job to actually just be knowing one category in a silo, but it's about getting to speed quite faster, picking up the dynamics playing in the market in that category, and then feeding it back to your team in terms of how do you engage with the suppliers, how do you engage with the business. So there's a lot more in there that's changing. And that's changing for the good, I believe, because if we invest in things and if we change for things which are more fungible, I think the whole spectrum where procurement can play generally becomes larger.
You say soft skills. We had a chap called Tom Mills in a recent episode, and he talked a lot about soft skills. In particular, it was a new one on me, emotional intelligence.
Yeah.
So I really am quite interested to explore your views on wider skill set, the typical non-procurement skill set, skills transference. So what makes a good procurement person if they're not from the procurement upbringing, so to speak?
Mm. Yeah. If they're not from the procurement upbringing, so to speak, then I think there's a larger chance that they already come in without the baggage of fitting into traditionally defined roles, which is good. I think what does make a good procurement person, to answer your question, in my opinion, it's really about thinking together about your customers first and less so much about the procurement processes. If I were a category manager, for example, let's say in a company that makes chocolate, and you would have seen the news, cocoa prices are off the roof, off the charts, topping like gold or diamond, I don't know what. So my job is not just about finding another supplier that can give me cocoa 10%, 15% cheaper. I think it's really about understanding what sort of chocolates do my customers actually like. Do we still need to make, I don't know, 20 different brands or 5 different brands? Which are the biggest ones they really like? Do they actually value 100% reduced cocoa or some other sort of cocoa? How can I really think of the customer first at the center of my decision-making process and then draw the conclusions on what is the implication it has on what I buy from the market, how I buy from the market, and who I buy it from? So to me, I think a good procurement person is really who thinks about the customer first and then the procurement side of things rather than the other way around.
And this is the procurement person as being an integral part of the team. If you're creating something, they're brought in early on, they're brought in right at the beginning of the R&D, sure. They're brought in to be the ultimate problem solver.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's about procurement getting out there in the business, understanding and getting close to the business stakeholders, something procurement resists doing, but it is so, so critical to success. On a related note, Priya, do you think procurement is getting more or less strategic right now?
I would say it's definitely getting more strategic. And I've been in a lot of conversations, and it's good to know, it's actually very pleasing to know that a lot more people are thinking about procurement becoming a critical business partner, getting a seat at the table. I'm not saying 100% of them are, right? But I think we're definitely on a trajectory that's getting more and more strategic rather than being seen as administrative team or a function that helps just get things over the line when you've already decided everything.
So what would you say to Gen Z, the youth of today who are perhaps thinking about their careers?
I think they're quite an interesting bunch. I would believe so. My sister also probably belongs to that. But in essence, I think what's very interesting about that bunch is that they're not satisfied. They come with like a never settle sort of an attitude. That's good because it brings the channel and energy to think things differently and, like, you know, really think, is this the best way to solve a given problem? I do think that's exactly that mindset that we need in procurement going further and forward. I also think that Gen Z is generally quite digitally savvy and quite fast in terms of picking up the nuances that change quite fast. I think that's also very good because it brings a lot of agility and speedy learning curve that we would need in procurement. But that also comes with its own challenges. We need to make the workspace a place where Gen Z can actually have fun doing the job while in procurement. And that definitely cannot come from doing things the traditional old style way, sitting in one corner of the office. There's a lot more space for collaboration with the business and with your suppliers, with the functions. And we need to do that to keep and retain the Gen Z. It's quite simple.
And now it's time for this week's Ask Jonathan.
And today's Ask Jonathan comes from Hannah Lewis in the US, who writes, "Dear Jonathan, I have read your book on sustainable procurement."
Thank you, Hannah.
Don't worry, somebody has to. "And it has become our go-to resource for implementing sustainable procurement in our business."
Brilliant.
"However, in recent months, it seems there has been a declining appetite for sustainability, and I'm finding it harder to make the business case for action. Is it just me or just the company I'm working for, or is the sustainability agenda and therefore sustainable procurement losing traction?"
Yeah, this is a really good question and quite topical. I think sustainability is one of these things. Sustainable procurement in particular has come front and center since 2020, really. And not just because of the pandemic, but because the sudden realization that resources are getting scarce and that's actually going to hurt us. Also, the fact that legislation has suddenly come down like an express train. So organizations responded and said, we're going to make sustainable procurement our number one. What has happened since then? is the world has gone a little bit crazy. Supply chains have gone all over the place. We've suddenly been fighting off all sorts of issues with increased tariffs and dealing with geopolitical crises all over the world. So procurement has just been sorting out the problems, and sustainability, sadly, is pushed back slightly. The second dimension is when you do it, what a lot of companies are finding out is actually doing sustainable procurement costs money. And ultimately, it should save us money and there should be a clear economic benefit. But to get it going, to get it over the line, there is a cost. So that means it's all become a little difficult. And what we've seen is a slight retreat, but it will be short term because the economic imperative is absolutely there. The economic business case is there. The need for it, driven by resource scarcity, cannot be ignored. The demand from consumers, stakeholders, customers, employees, society at large cannot be ignored. And if you ignore it, you'll lose brand value. And the number one reason, the legislation that is here or on the way, you'll have no choice but to do it. So yeah, it's taken a slight step back, but it's going to be back at number one on the agenda. And any company that ignores that will be dealing with a whole bunch of other issues.
I spoke to a charity CEO the other day and we were talking about his future and what success looks like.
Yeah.
And he said that his ultimate aim is to make himself redundant because he's a charity CEO. And if he corrects all the issues that he's responsible for, he won't be needed anymore. So with regards to sustainable procurement and how you look at companies and how they embrace it and how they evaluate whether it's working for them, what should success look like?
The sustainable procurement person making themselves redundant because everything's sustainable.
Brilliant.
But I don't think that's going to happen. It looks like that we're able to be well on the way to doing that, I think.
Excellent. Thank you very much. Good answer there, Jonathan.
Yeah.
And thank you very much for your question as well. If you wanted to ask Jonathan a question, here's how to get in touch.
Ask Jonathan. Email your question to jonathan@theprocurementshow.com. You might be part of the next show. The Procurement Show is brought to you by Positive Purchasing, the home of category management that delivers breakthrough results.
This is very upbeat. I love that response. But I still keep going back to what Priya said earlier about a lot of people in procurement having a lot of baggage.
Yeah.
How long have you worked in procurement again, Jonathan?
30-something years.
30-something years.
Yeah. And I think, you know, I agree, though, you can accumulate a lot of baggage. And it's a simple choice. Am I going to embrace the new thing or am I going to stick with what I know? And I work with a lot of companies, I teach a lot of people, and I see a lot of people who just won't embrace change. One of the hardest things in transformation is getting people to come with you when you're saying, actually, forget how you did RFPs and ran tenders in the past. Now, we're not going to do that stuff. We're going to do digital category management and we're going to do it in a different way. The active resistance, and often it is a generational thing. So just only this week, we're working with the company to drive in category management using Capella, digital category management tool. So within that group of people, the Gen Zers were just straight in. It's an app, you know, click, click, click. You know, this is what I need to do. And they're just all over it. And I don't want to make this a generational thing, but you will then see other people who actually, I'm a bit scared of that. Can I just have a template? And yeah, of course, you can do that. So, you know, there are different ways of doing these things. But I think you can let yourself have baggage if you want to, or you can recognize that the world is just going at 150 miles an hour. You can get on the train and go with it, or you can try and hold it back, but you'll never do that.
I would love to jump on that train.
Yeah.
150 miles an hour, right? Jonathan, when you mentioned you've got 30 years of experience, I do think that there's a lot of depth that you've carried.
That's
that
polite.
We cannot lose. And I don't mean to say that digital or anything is going to substitute all of it, right?
Yeah.
I think companies learn a lot and accumulate a lot of collective intelligence over a period of time. I guess what we need is a bit of a balance of both. And sometimes it's a bit of a bet that you see realizing or not working only after a lot of time has passed. But sadly, that's the way about it, right?
Yeah,
it's just an attitudinal thing, really. Yeah, it's nothing to do with experience or age. It's purely an attitudinal thing, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely. And talking about attitudinal things, talk about mindsets. Do you think companies have the right mindset for how they're approaching developing procurement talent? And in particular, the executive team. Do you see executives' teams saying, hey, you know, we've got to invest in procurement in the same way that they say, let's make sure we're investing in our top sales and marketing people?
Yeah, I think there's always a mix, unfortunately, right? It really depends on what sectors you look at. if we talk to some of our consumer goods companies, I think their procurement has a very strong influence in terms of things that are really bought. Because if I took back the cocoa example, the cocoa I buy as a category manager is going to change the taste of the chocolate. And it's a lot more close to your end product. There are also quite a few other industries where procurement, I think, at the risk of generalizing, is quite often seen as a procedural function, right? Like you think of banks and like these are heavily regulated businesses. They think of procurement as buying a lot more like IT solutions, working with the data, but that's very far from banks interacting with their customers and selling retail products. So I think there's a bit of spectrum of the two. There are some industries or even some companies where procurement is more at the center of executives' investments and decision-making process compared to the others. And this is also a lot more linked to how companies think of talent management, whether you look at it as a training exercise or whether you look at it as a long-term returns exercise where investing in talent is going to give a lot of returns.
You're so upbeat. Yep. I love your attitude.
We need more of that in procurement.
You're clearly creative. You're very much pro-end user. And you've referred to what matters to the consumer, the end user, the final person that buys, whatever it is being manufactured or serviced, as being perhaps the number one most important person in all of this. It's really positive.
Absolutely.
So when it comes to talent, I like to respect various talents, particularly when it comes to, you know where I'm going with this, don't
chef
you?
Talent.
Chefing.
People
chefing.
That cook things, maybe.
Absolutely.
In fast food outlets.
Restaurants as well. I went into a restaurant the other day and the waiter came up to me and said, would you like to hear the chef special? And I said, I don't mind who you employ.
He's been trying to get that joke in the last 58 episodes.
Yes.
And he's finally done it.
So it leads me on to talk about takeaways. So Priya, what are your three takeaways from our conversation here today, please?
I think we touched upon a lot of things, but I think a few things that really struck me and that I think are my key takeaways. We need to be comfortable with change. And a lot is changing in procurement, both outside the market and in the way internally, like businesses and functions see procurement. And we need to be comfortable with that because the change is going to happen irrespective of whether we are comfortable with it or not. Then I think the second thing that I really took back is the role of procurement is very much changing. It's no more just about delivering cost reduction year on year. It's a lot more. It's about making sure that the company continues to operate if a pandemic happens. It's also about making sure the company buys sustainable solutions and at a cost-effective rate, which is a big challenge. So it's a lot more versatile and holistic now in terms of procurement's role. And I think the third maybe is really, I don't think there's a silver bullet. And I don't want to sound like a pessimist, but I do think there's a lot of advantage in solutions, in technology, in data and digital at the pace that it's growing. I do think it's not a silver bullet, though. It needs to come quite holistically with embedding that technology in the way procurement functions.
And before we pass on our heartfelt thanks to you, I'm just going to bring Jonathan in on this because I know he's extremely passionate about training, education and encouraging new talent in the field. What are your learns?
Absolutely. There's no silver bullet. There's no magic button. And that's the key thing because a lot of people are waiting for that magic button and neglecting the talent. And right now, given the situation we're in the world, you need really good talent to just be sorting out and navigating through this stuff. The tech will come. It'll come and it will do amazing things. But if we neglect the procurement talent, actually, companies will be dead in the water because they will have stopped doing the thing that's going to really add the value that it needs, I think.
Fully agree, yeah.
Priya Kumari, thank you so much for coming onto the Procurement Show. It's been a delight to have you on and it's been like a ball of energy.
Absolutely.
So we really, really appreciate you coming and sharing your insights on procurement talent. And we wish you the very best in your future career.
Thank you. Thanks, Jonathan. And thanks, Paul. It was a pleasure to be here.
You've been listening to the Procurement Show. Contact us by email, hello@theprocurementshow.com. Connect with us on LinkedIn, search for The Procurement Show, and visit us at theprocurementshow.com. You can also WhatsApp us on +44 7396 939933. The Procurement Show is brought to you by Positive Purchasing, transforming procurement with exceptional tools and advanced training. Produced in the UK by Fresh Air Studios. The Procurement Show is copyright Positive Purchasing, all rights reserved.
Capella is the latest in digital category management. Capella makes creating great category strategies easy, strategies you can trust. Because Capella's intelligence is built upon 5i category management, trusted by companies the world over to deliver results. Which means when you choose Capella's guided mode, you can be confident you'll get the best possible strategy. Or switch to advanced mode and work the 5i steps. All with AI's helping hand. Make digital category management something you can trust. Search Capella Category Strategy or visit positivepurchasing.com to find out more. Capella, the guided category strategy creator.